Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Hey, Rebecca, you know, whenever we travel, wherever we go, whether it's Europe or whether it's Asia, we always get questions about Canada. It feels like Canada can rival the US on popularity.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I can't tell you how many times, you know, a lot of people don't want the U.S. program, but so many are interested in the Canadian program. Or I think we've also touched on this before, Mona, that sometimes I think there is a bit of misconceptions about coming to Canada and it being a way to the U.S. But I think for the most part, people are trying to find a way to get to the West.
Well, we can talk for a long while about why people might want Canada, but we thought you don't want to hear our voices.
Well, maybe they would like to hear our voices, Mona, but they would probably also prefer to hear the voice of an expert in the area, one such as our guest today, Patrick McCarthy. Patrick is the director of the Immigrant Investor Program at Sherbrooke Street Capital. Welcome to the show, Patrick.
Thank you very much for having me. Great to be here.
You. So Rebecca and I can wax lyrical about all of these other programs and everything, but I know our listeners want to hear the information from the top. So before I even go any further, what is your experience in the Canadian immigration program?
Well, you know, I've been involved in immigration for more than 25 years. My first job at a university, my big dream out of university was to go work for the federal government. And I had the fortune of Citizenship and Immigration Canada in the Business Immigration Unit. And that's how I started my career and later moved over to the private sector, working with one of the big banks in Canada, promoting the Immigrant Investor Program. And now for the last 8-9 years with Sherbrooke Street Capital, the director here of the Immigrant Investor Program.
Well, I have to say, Rebecca and I love working with you guys and the friendliness and the congeniality where we feel when we come out. It's just wonderful. And I wonder if that's one of the reasons people always want to talk about going to Canada.
Well, first, the feeling is mutual. We love working with you as well and love talking with you. Yeah, people do love Canada. You know, Canada, we are a nation of immigrants. We passed an important milestone. I don't know if you heard, but the population of Canada surpassed 40 million.
Oh, wow.
And largely due to immigration.
So, Patrick, you mean you're the size of one of the boroughs in New York City?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I knew you were going to give me a hard time about that. But it is an important milestone. You know, I can remember not long ago, we talk about Canada being a country of about 30 million. And I remember even in high school, it being a country of 25 million. And so our population has really grown over the last 25, 30 years. And the largest component of that is immigration. Canadians, for whatever reason, we're not having a lot of babies. And so immigration is a big driver for our population and for our economy and for our institutions and organizations. And that's really an important part of the mosaic, as we say, of what Canada is today.
You know, so interesting. Whenever we look at the history of migration of the three countries that we deal a lot with, United Kingdom, United States, and of course, Canada, it really is all post-World War II. Although obviously with the United States, there was a lot of immigration since the 18th, 17th century. What we're talking about now is all post-World War II. And for Canada, we're really looking at the 80s. The 80s was the golden boom, really.
Well, I think really what happened, what the shift started, yeah, probably in the 1980s, maybe going back to the 70s is, you know, up until that point, I think we saw a lot of European migration to Canada from Western Europe, from Eastern Europe. And really starting in the 1970s and 80s, it started to open up. First, a lot of Asian immigration, South American immigration, African immigration. And it's really changed the fabric. It's really changed the landscape of the Canadian population over the last 40 to 50 years. Yeah.
Yeah. If I remember correctly, in the 80s, wasn't that a big boom for, like, I think the business migration or business immigration became popular at that time versus some of the other traditional ways of coming in for immigration status?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think in this area, Canada is one of the pioneers. In the mid-1980s, the government introduced the first immigrant investor program. the idea was simple. You invest your capital here, you get permanent residency through that investment. And following the unfortunate events of 1987 at Tiananmen Square, there was a real boom out of Hong Kong with the handover looming.
Oh, we remember that. We remember that very well. 1997. Wasn't that Brian Mulroney's government? He's the one who pioneered it, or was that earlier?
Right. So following 87, the program really took off. A lot of investors came from Taiwan, from Hong Kong, but not just those two countries. I mean, it really started growing from different parts of the world.
So for an awful long time, the program has been closed since 2017, 2018, and it did not look like the program was opening again.
Yeah, you're right. The program's been closed since 2019, October of 2019. You know, I've always been optimistic. This program, specifically about the Quebec Immigrant Investor Program, it brings a lot of value, not just in terms of capital it brings, but also the people it attracts and what's done with that capital in Quebec. And so we were always very optimistic that the program would come back, but we recognized also that the government wanted to modernize the program. I guess that's the right word, is review it and revise it in a way, in a meaningful way, in a way it hadn't been revised in probably 20 years. So we knew those changes were coming. We knew what they wanted to do. I think COVID probably delayed the implementation and probably put things off track a little bit of timeline for that. But we're all very excited now to have this news that it is opening.
Patrick, but weren't there real backlogs prior to it closing? I had read somewhere 4 years, 5 year backlogs before people actually got their residency.
Yeah, that has definitely been one of the problems of the program, or one of the criticisms of the program, I should say.
There's still, even today, even with the program closed, I think they're still even reviewing applications that were filed prior to the closure of the program. That's how far behind they were.
Yes.
From what we've heard, like they were continuing to still review applications. Obviously, they're not taking any further applications as the program's closed, but those that made it in are still going through the process. But taking a step back though, right? Because there was issues of so many backlogs and all of that happening, but then weren't there issues with having the time, amount of time to review these applications? Wasn't that a problem as well? Like they had to get through applications so quickly because there were so many coming in that they were seeing if documents were really fraudulent documents coming in, all these assets that were coming in, were some of them being bypassed? I think there was some criticism on the program regarding that as well.
I don't necessarily agree with that. I feel like the program has maintained its integrity. The candidates that go through the Immigrant Investor Program, they go through a tremendous amount of vetting by multiple levels of government and as well background checks by international agencies. I think what you may be referring to is there was an expose maybe 4 or 5 or 6 years ago even that made some headlines in Canada. But much of what that exposed was actually problems that had existed with the program probably 10, 15 years earlier, and that had been cleaned up and taken care of. But I think by and large, if you look back at the history of the program, that number of cases or that even that percentage is quite minute. I don't think that we've ever had a problem with program integrity. I think the governments do a very good job of vetting.
I see it the same way. You read one article and then you're like, oh, is this what's happening? But it's nice to see it from your perspective.
I think it's so important, Rebecca, because so many of us are colored by just articles. And let's face it, Patrick, they're only going to write about the negative.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Nobody talks about the positives this program has brought. I mean, this program, the Quebec Investor Program, has funded billions of dollars of grants to small to medium-sized enterprises, which, you know, have created jobs for people in the province. And not only that, it also funds a non-governmental organization, which works to facilitate the integration and of new immigrants to the country, you know, providing them with language training, skills training, jobs training. And these are all programs funded by the Immigrant Investor Program. That doesn't get talked about a lot in the news, but those are really important benefits, you know, products of this program.
Actually, that is interesting because, you know, not playing devil's advocate, I don't want to be the one who's always bringing in, but it's interesting to know that because there's others who are like, well, what is the benefit of the Quebec program? Because there are other programs within Canada that may not be as stringent or may not be as hard to get into, such as the Quebec program. Is that something the government is looking into to making it a bit easier for investors or for individuals wanting to come and live in Canada? Because, like, for instance, the language requirement or the expertise that you need to have, is that something the government is working on?
I've been doing this long enough that I don't think over time immigration requirements become more relaxed. I think 20 years ago, if I'd met a potential client, I would have said the same thing, which is apply now, because you never know what changes will come in 2 or 3 years. And sure enough, every year something new is introduced, the bar is raised, the requirements become harder. As much as Canada is a welcoming country and increasing our immigration targets, the demand is also increasing. And so I think that if anything, it's normal progression that requirements change and become a little bit more difficult over time.
Well, one of the criticisms, though, that I see with immigration into Canada is that even with the Quebec program, Patrick, people come in, but they don't necessarily stay in Quebec. And the idea is that they come and they invest and they stay within that province. But then it doesn't take long and they move over to one of the other cities, perhaps Toronto or Vancouver.
Yeah, and that's such an important issue. I think that for too long, the program has been used, and some people have done exactly what you've said and settled in other parts of the country. And I know that this government, one of their key objectives was to put a system in place that would not just encourage, but require people to establish here. And that's one of the important changes of this program, is that they are required to reside in the province of Quebec and in order to get permanent immigration. That's a requirement they're going to have to meet.
What about those coming in on another visa? I hear a lot about the startup visa, and that's becoming more and more popular. But let's say someone comes in on the startup visa. Are they able to go to, let's say they wanted to have residence in Quebec? Is that something they can do? Or is Quebec kind of its own territory and you can only come in through the Quebec immigrant program?
That's an excellent question. And we could spend an entire podcast discussing the Quebec-Canada Accord. So Quebec within Canada, Quebec being a nation within Canada, has certain rights and obligations that other provinces don't have. And thanks to the Canada Accord, which I think dates back to 1991, if I'm not mistaken, Quebec has the authority to select the foreign nationals that will come and reside in the province of Quebec. The federal government is ultimately responsible for the admission of those foreign nationals, doing the final security and medical checks, but Quebec has the authority to select them. And so we do have two immigration systems in Canada. We have a federal immigration system and we have the Quebec immigration system, and they work in parallel. And the startup visa program that you referenced, that administered and run by the federal government. And so although I never like to mention the startup visa program and the Quebec investor program in the same breath, because they're very different programs, but you're right. Applicants to the startup visa program, it is designed for those that want to establish anywhere outside of the province of Quebec. So the startup visa program, you have to intend to establish somewhere in one of the other 9 provinces or 3 territories in Canada. Now, with the latest changes to the regulations that have been proposed last month in Quebec, there is an entrepreneur stream that is somehow similar to the startup visa program in the clientele it's aiming to attract.
You know, Patrick, Christian Nishan's excellent IMI Daily has a number of articles relating to the reopening of the Quebec program. And there was an article that I had read which really related more to the fact that so many wealthy Chinese didn't ever set foot in Quebec, came in, they bought property in Vancouver, and all the changes, the new changes coming out, isn't there to really disturb that kind of scenario?
Well, quite to the contrary. I think the proposed regulations address a lot of the concerns of the government had, particularly in 2 areas. One is that requirement to establish and reside in Quebec. The new regulations do require that applicants spend up to at least another 6 months in Quebec over the course of the first 2 years. In addition to that, for the first time, there's a language requirement where there's an obligation for them to learn a minimal amount of French over that course of time as well. So I think in that sense, these changes do address that concern of investors using it as a gateway into Canada and then ending up establishing in other parts of the country.
Yeah, and I like what you said earlier that, you know, a lot of people may see that as a negative aspect because they have to learn French, they have to, you know, do X, Y, and Z. But you said there were programs set up where it helps you versus you having to learn it on your own or having those qualifications, because there's a lot of arguments out there then, well, that's only a small percentage of people that could come in through the Quebec program because they may not meet those requirements. So I think having those programs really help.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. You know, sometimes in this industry, I think we lose focus on really what these programs are intended for. This program, the Quebec Investor Program, it's not just a foreign direct investment program. It's not just a way for the province to raise capital. This is an immigration program. This is first and foremost an immigration program. And in Quebec, we're a French-speaking province. our official language is French. And so it's normal that the government wants to attract French speakers. In terms of the size of the pool, it's interesting because the program has had several iterations over the course of the last 30, 40 years. And every time there's changes, you know, there's also criticism that comes with it. And I remember several years ago when for the first time caps limits were imposed that limited the number of applications that could come from mainland Chinese. Well, people were up in arms about it. They said, oh, the government's never going to reach the targets. This isn't fair. It's not right. And I understand that if your market is China and you're used to doing all your business in China, that I understand that that's your frame of your you know, that's where you're working from. I think that French speaking markets and looking for clients who speak French already or that have the propensity to learn French, I think that market exists all over the world. And I think that maybe those markets are underdeveloped. And so if the numbers to date have been low in terms of the French speaker number of French speakers that have come in using this program, I think that's probably largely a function of maybe the efforts that went into marketing in those areas. And I think with these new changes, that's going to really force service providers and practitioners to really look at new markets and see where clients can come from.
So Patrick, you know, we're going on about the Quebec program, but tell us a bit about what changes are we actually expecting to see and when are we actually going to see the program reopen?
Great question. So first change that's going to be happening is that Quebec is moving towards more of a two-stage process, not completely dissimilar from the US EB-5 program, where once approved into the program, applicants are going to make their investments and then be granted temporary status in the province of Quebec. And that temporary status will be valid for 3 years.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. And over the course of those first 2 years, they have certain obligations. The first is that during that two-year period, the principal applicant has to have been physically present in Quebec for at least 6 months, plus either the principal applicant or the spouse have to spend another six-month period in the province of Quebec. So for a total of 12 months. The second obligation they have is that during those first 24 months, they have to be able to demonstrate that they're able to speak and understand spoken French to a level of 7 out of 12 on the standardized tests. That's just oral French, not written French or reading. So those are the two changes that they're going to have to demonstrate within that first two-year period. Once they've satisfied those conditions, then they're eligible to receive what we call certificates of selection from the province of Quebec and apply for permanent residence in Canada. The other big change is the investment itself. So the amount hasn't changed from when it was last opened. That amount is 1.2 million Canadian dollars. But how that money is going to be used or how that money is broken up is a little bit different. Before, it was an investment of $1.2 million with the Quebec government. That money was guaranteed. The capital was guaranteed to be returned after 5 years. Now what's happened is that investment has been split into two components. The first is a $200,000 non-refundable contribution directly to the government of Quebec. And the second part, the $1 million that's remaining, that's the $1 million investment. It's for 5 years. And after 5 years, the capital is guaranteed to be returned. The outlay is still the same. It's still $1.2 million. The difference being that instead of getting $1.2 million at the back after 5 years, the investor will receive $1
million. So it's that $200,000 donation requirement, which I've read about, has been the issue, Patrick. Will that mean this program is not so marketable anymore?
I don't think so. I think, you know, that $200,000, it is a new feature of the program. Interestingly, with the $1 million investment, financial intermediaries such as ourselves are, because it's guaranteed by the government after to be returned after 5 years, we're still going to have the capabilities to finance that investment for the investors. That's a big advantage of the program versus a lot of other programs like the US EB-5, which don't allow that kind of financing, right?
Well, you can get financing in the US, but the difference is that your money's at risk.
Correct.
There's no guarantees at all.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, you can get back your 500 plus interest.
800.
You know, 800. Sorry, 800. Going back into the old rules. But yeah, at the end of the day, you can get that back.
Well, you could even make more than interest if it's certain projects. You could make a lot of money. Whereas here, it's not really entrepreneurial in the same vein.
It's not, because the idea of the program is that all of the revenues and benefits that are derived from the client's investment are used by the government to support these programs that we referred to earlier, which is the grants to small to medium-sized enterprises, the supporting of the organizations that promote integration and language training and skills training for new immigrants. So the benefit of that investment is directly in the economy, but it's just in a different way than other programs like the EB-5.
Well, what I found attractive is what you said earlier, is that you actually don't make the investment until you are approved, right? And then it's kind of like the EB-5 part is kind of a bit conditional for the 2 years, and then you apply again to get the permanent residence, right? But it's the fact that you get approved prior to investing, which I think that could attract a lot of people, because you don't want to invest, and get denied, and then what happens to the funds?
Absolutely. And we expect that to be relatively quick as well. You know, in our meetings with the Quebec government, they've indicated they want to be able to process these applications very quick, ideally within 6 to 9 months. And applicants then, they're going to know that they're approved, and at that point are going to make their required investments. Now, then they're going to have to come to Quebec at that point, meet the residency requirement, meet the language requirement, but they will have already passed the first stage and they'll be in Canada relatively quickly.
I think, Mona, if the Quebec program is taking 6 to 9 months to adjudicate these, USCIS needs to take some lessons.
Yeah, that's serious, serious competition.
Yeah.
Patrick, when will this competition begin? When is the program expected to really start up and accept applicants?
So right now we're in the 45-day public consultation period. So the proposed regulations have been published at the end of May, and the public has a 45-day period to provide their comments. We expect the final regulations to come out in the fall, maybe around October, maybe September. And by the time the administration gets the chance to update forms, update procedures, et cetera, it could be maybe towards the end of the year that the program actually reopens.
Oh, Patrick, well, we do look forward to seeing what the program's coming out with at that point, but I am going to twist it a bit. We are hearing news about the ETA, the Electronic Travel Authorization. Is that something similar to ESTA that we have here in the U.S.?
Yeah, it's very similar, exactly. You know, ETAs in Canada were introduced almost 10 years ago, and it's in the context of the Perimeter Action Plan, and the goal was to harmonize Canada and US's approach to pre-departure screening. What's made the news in the last couple of weeks is the expansion of the ETA program. Traditionally, it's been for foreign nationals that are coming from countries which enjoy visa waivers with Canada, that aren't required to apply for a visa before coming to Canada. But in the latest announcement from the Minister of Immigration, there was an inclusion of 13 countries. It was expanded to 13 countries who don't have visa-free access to Canada.
Well, we noticed a lot of those countries are actually from the Caribbean.
Yeah, there are, and from Central America as well. I'd be hard-pressed to name all 13 countries right now on the spot. Argentina, I believe Uruguay was on the list, yeah. The Philippines was on the list, Morocco. And interestingly, St. Lucia, the country of Antigua and Barbuda, and St. Kitts and Nevis, all three of which offer citizenship by investment programs. The twist there is that citizens of those 13 countries, in order to be eligible for the ETA, they must have had a Canadian visa in the last 10 years or currently have a non-immigrant U.S. visa. And when you think about it, it makes sense because all of these applicants have already been screened. They've already been vetted by either Canada or the U.S. And so in order to avoid some administrative duplication, why not give them a simpler route to come visit Canada?
Yeah, I did notice also on the list, Patrick, that you have Taiwan, but no China. There's no Southeast Asia. Really, there's just Japan and Korea. It is quite limited in that respect.
Yeah, I believe most countries in Southeast Asia, in East Asia, they don't enjoy visa-free access to Canada. And so the ETA program is limited, like you said, to just a handful of countries.
But like you said, it's still even limited to the fact that you had to have a visa prior. But I think it's a good way of opening it up. And maybe for those wanting to bring business in, the U.S. is a huge hub when it comes to business and all of that. So is that something we could see maybe coming to Canada as well, that ease of travel and being able to come in and do more things within Canada itself?
Yeah, I think anytime you remove barriers that stop people from visiting Canada, spending money here, doing business here, I think it's a positive thing. And again, we shouldn't make it sound like there's no verifications or anything that are going to happen on people before they come. Like I said, just the fact that they would have been screened already by either Canada or the U.S. in that previous visa application. I mean, much of the work has already been done. So if anything, it just sort of removes some of that duplication. And when they do apply for an ETA is not automatic. There is a certain amount of screening and verifications, although much simpler and much faster. But there is a certain amount that does happen anyway, similar to when people apply for ESTAs to visit the United States.
Exactly. Yeah. Not all times they will you know, it's not 100% that you'll get it, because like you said, they still kind of do some kind of screening before it's given automatically.
Absolutely.
You know, Patrick, Rebecca and I were at a conference in Canada back in 2018 when the program was had announced that they were closing. And from what we heard, there was a lot of criticism within the Canadian government about any kind of residency by investment, similar to what has been said in the US, that these are wealthy countries. Why do we need to sell citizenship, quote unquote? Obviously, we look at things differently. It encourages people of wealth and means to come into the country and indirectly bring a lot of foreign overseas development capital and resources. But I'm going to ask you, have you seen similar criticisms in Quebec? Why does the province of Quebec even need a program, an immigration program like this?
You know, I always say that in Canada, we have a number of different immigration programs. I couldn't count them, the number of programs we have. And the idea of all the programs is that really, you know, if you're an individual, there should be one program out there for you. It's quite rare sometimes that you'd be eligible for multiple programs. And I think the true is same for investors. Those that are applying through the investor program, they might be a little bit older. You know, they're no longer skilled workers, right? They've created a lot of wealth for themselves through the business they've run. They might be a little bit older and not necessarily the same target as the skilled worker programs, for example. Similarly, they've created a lot of wealth and they might not be at the stage where they want to start a new business. So it differs, you know, from an entrepreneur program. But it doesn't mean that they don't bring a tremendous value to society as well. Typically, we've seen a lot of investors come in. They spend money here, their kids are educated here, and they contribute to society in a positive way. And so I think that the Quebec government recognizes that there is value in bringing in these wealthy investors that can contribute a lot in the way, maybe in terms of ties between Quebec and their home country, cross-cultural ties, doing business between them. And I think there's a lot of benefits directly and indirectly that can come from these types of investor programs.
Patrick, we could talk for hours, but I think that we definitely have to ask you to come back again and chat with us.
I would love to.
There's so much more to discuss on this topic, right, Rebecca?
Oh, so much more.
That would be great.
Agreed. Patrick McCarthy, thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.